America and all of our listeners all over the world. You are looking at a probably pre-apocalypse edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
So why do I say pre-apocalypse even though, you know, we just went through fucking COVID?
Sailed.
Yeah. It's mostly because now everybody is suddenly seeming to realize how fucking incompetent our government really is. And everybody is losing their goddamn minds.
If they had them before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they had them before. We'll be talking about some of them, including our current president, because it's now becoming increasingly obvious that even other Republicans aren't really get ready to take his shit anymore. Mm. And like every incumbent president has to do, Trump's team is actually preparing a transition plan, you know, if and when he loses the election in November. And you know it's just fucking killing him to do it.
Yeah.
So if nothing else, you can feel good going to bed tonight knowing that Trump is suffering from the very bottom of his black, black heart. But anyway, as far as COVID-19 itself goes, obviously we got a fresh load in the COVID-19 dump truck that'll be coming at you shortly. Here in Georgia, it looks like everything is we have actually plateaued now. Specifically here in Jones County, once the opening up happened here, we went from 21 cases up to 29. And then since then it has gone to 31. So only 2 new cases since. So I'm guessing, you know, as far as the heat and everything and combining that with the social distancing and stuff, it's actually it's working, basically.
Well, take into consideration the incubation time for it.
Yeah, that is also true. Yeah. I do have to bring that up as well.
You'll probably know more next week about it.
Hmm. Yeah, we'll see what'll happen then. But for right now, white folks is crazy.
Just finding this out.
Yeah, just white folks is crazy. Everybody is losing their goddamn mind. And everybody else is just I'm just holding the fort down, man.
Yeah.
You know, just let them go and infect themselves and, you know, maybe they'll learn their fucking lesson.
Yeah.
Some of them won't. But anyway, so let us start as we always start off. Phil, what have you been doing this week?
So I'm still going through the Wheel of Time. Book 13, I'm about a third of the way through that one.
Okay.
So
let's see. How many books are there total?
15 if you count the prequel. So
ah.
Yeah. I haven't read the prequel.
So you're at the first Brandon Sanderson one?
Second Brandon Sanderson one.
Second Brandon Sanderson one. Okay.
Yeah. So, going through that one, Rand has gone insane and then not, so that was a good thing. It's still a very interesting series. I'm noticing the writing style change from Jordan to Sanderson a little bit more now than I did before.
Yeah.
Not that that's a bad thing, it's just a little different.
Is it really that clear of a change? Can you really tell it's suddenly that Sanderson is now the one writing it?
Yes, you can. The writing style. Well, you've read the Mistborn series.
Yeah,
it's very much like that.
Ah,
so yeah, it's Tip Sanderson's style. It's not bad, but when you've come off of just having read all of the Jordan ones, you can kind of see there's a very distinct difference in writing style. So. Yeah, that's a little bit weird to get used to, but, you know, I'm into the second of his books now, so it's kind of, settled in, so I'm not really too worried about it now. Now I'm starting to pick up on stuff that was set up way earlier in the series and is starting to pay off now. So, yeah, it's good. Good series. And, can't wait to finish it. that last book is a monster, so
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that one will probably take a couple of weeks for me to get through. So I've been doing that, and then, getting back into the emulation stuff. Got my Sega Genesis Mini running Sega CD and 32X games.
Yes. So
that's fun. Now, I kind of wish I had gotten the Tower of Power add-on just to make it look more authentic. So, but yeah. So it's doing that, and it's fun. I could also put on, like, TurboGrafx games on there and PC Engine CD and do all that stuff if I wanted to. But that just kind of seems a little weird running on a thing that's a Sega Genesis look-alike. So, yeah, I'm just not bothering with that. Besides which, TurboGrafx Mini comes out this week, so, yeah. I'm going to be probably picking one up in a couple of weeks when I get paid, so I'll be good. And beyond that, I'm still working on my Doom project with my friend. He's been working hard on the maps, and I've been working on the coding in the background. This week was getting security cameras working, so I got that going. What else have I been doing? Yeah, working on connecting the maps together in a hub format, which is something that was a bit different. And yeah, you can't use traditional exits to do that. You have to use teleports, which is strange, but hey, I figured it out. So beyond that, just working on that and trying to get 3D models to show up in the game properly and not having a whole hell of a lot of luck with it. So we'll see how that goes, and if I ever figure that out properly, well, I'll have fun objects to put in there, aside from stuff that you can make with sectors.
All right. Yeah,
so that's kind of it for
you
me.
You in need of a rider yet?
Not really. No, we're
just throwing that out there.
I'll keep you in mind.
All right. Awesome. All right. So, Pat, what have you been up to?
Still playing the stock market.
I got
out of some really, really dodgy stocks that I was invested in just in the nick of time, because I would have lost my shirt if I'd waited maybe a couple more hours.
Yes, and, you fucking would have.
Ooh, did... Ooh.
I did not sell Tat.
Ooh.
I'm only $10 into it, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I took everything I had out of that and put it in Halliburton, and I'm just on cruise control now. I also have a stock of Coca-Cola now, which is probably the safest stock in existence.
So. Yeah, I've got Coca-Cola stock too, but that's because I'm from Georgia and I'm genetically obligated to.
Yeah, yeah. I've just had enough people tell me it's the greatest stock of all time, and so, you know, being that I could afford it and it's the greatest stock of all time, I decided I had to get in on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also got Catalyst Pharmaceutical, which is getting a lot of good reviews, but you know, we'll see where that one goes. I'm not as invested in that as I am in Coke or Halliburton. But other than that, I uploaded 6 more Utah Eagles hockey games last night.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I should stream drunk more, because the last two videos, games 25 and 26 of the second season, are probably some of my best voiceover stuff to date. Just because the two games that preceded that had me 11 sheets to the wind. So, yeah, I basically I had given the team sort of a deadline to get their act together, or I was going to have to make some shake-up moves. And when the game, the day of that deadline had played out, they were still sitting with a 500 record. And so I went disappointed store manager on them, and lots of new faces now. So I don't think I went any crazier than an actual NHL GM in the same position would, but something definitely had to be done. And I think I've got things moving in a more positive direction right now, but we'll see. But I definitely recommend checking out those last couple games, because that's absolutely the brand of hockey I want these guys to play. Thanks to Teresa, I have access to Crunchyroll now, and I'm trying to figure out what to do with myself on it, because, good Lord, that's a selection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so. My God. There is so much.
Mm-hmm. I am kind of surprised that they have Fuka there without its prequel. Because its prequel was actually one of my favorite slice of life anime of all time, Suzuka. But right now I'm just soliciting advice for what to look into and getting a queue put together to, of stuff to watch with everything else going on, you know. Reddit rabbit holes are still a thing. Am I the Asshole is still my favorite one. A good friend of mine from work has introduced me to Choosing Beggars, which is comedy gold. And I'm just, it may come as a surprise to some people, but apparently my presence is a little bit controversial on Am I the Asshole? Other than that, I've got all of my allocation of external hard drives completed, and a 3 terabyte hard drive is now connected to my 2 terabyte PlayStation 4. I am still working out what to play after having gotten all of my downloading done, and I have options. So, honestly, my PS4 dashboard right now reads like the gaming equivalent of the Crunchyroll anime selection. So, so that's been a whole thing. And then, I've become this guy who, will squeeze a Hot Pocket open to sprinkle black pepper into it and then wonder why I have heartburn later. So,
because you ate a Hot Pocket.
Well, yeah, but black pepper is becoming a way of life for me more than it already was, for better or for worse, or for better and for worse, I should say. But that's been my week, and I will be right back before the water boils over.
All right. Well, while he's off doing that, Teresa, what have you been up to?
We finished up season 3 of The Crown, so that is yet another thing that we're all caught up on. And at this point, I'm starting to think, if this goes much longer, I'm not going to have a backlog. This is kind of sort of awesome. Mm-hmm. Maybe not sort of awesome, but you know what I mean. I played Kingdom 2 Crowns, Deadlands, and was working on that. And then I was also working on some of the... Well, it's not an achievement. It's just I wanted to get gold on Challenge Island. Yeah. See, he knows I shouldn't be playing that game. I don't get anything done when I play that game. Mm-hmm. We started listening to... We didn't finish the third book in Babaverse, so we started listening to that again. Went back probably 6 or 7 chapters. And we're pretty much where we left off. So we're going to be doing that. And I have been playing Animal Crossing a lot. A whole lot. I think yesterday I played 16 hours straight. And that's no surprise. And I got a 5-star island. So there's that. But this week is pretty much Animal Crossing. What else can I say?
Yeah, that's 16 hours in one day. That's
a lot of Animal Crossing.
I thought that wasn't a game you can binge.
Apparently.
No, I was really told you can. This is not a game. Wow.
This one you can.
Yeah, well, a lot of them you can. After they got rid of Mr. Rossetti, they know that people are going to binge it and do like the first year and the first month by doing time traveling. So, yeah, since yesterday morning, I started playing at about 5:30 in the morning.
Is Rossetti still on the island, like as a retiree or something? No, I feel like that should be a
totally
thing.
He's totally gone. He's totally gone. We beat him and put him in a coffin 6 feet under. He's not there. Nor is his
See,
brother.
I was asking what you do in this game a couple weeks ago, and you never told me that one.
Oh yeah, no, he is gone with the wind, man.
No, you never mentioned administering beatdowns. This is.
Well, we're going to play our shit, man. We don't care what's going on. But I have probably time traveled and played through, I think, about 10 or 12 in-game days. games in day. I don't know. My brain is mush. It's mush. But like I said, 5-star town. And I finished my arcade, which was amazing. It's amazing. Like, I need to retire and live on my island. So, yeah. But can we have this in VR? Because the Oasis ain't got nothing on Animal Crossing here. And something's boiling over in our kitchen. But that's all for me.
Okay.
All right, Chris, what about you then?
This has just been a very tiring week with a lot of work going on. I finally got some time off here this weekend, so I get to, figure out what recovery is. Because that's been today so far just doing nothing. Just physically trying to recover from a very long week, dealing with whatever the hell this reopening is around here, which saw some of the nearby stores open up to pretty full parking lots. And it didn't go in any of them because I don't need to do any of that. And as far as I can see, people are basically acting like nothing's happened anymore, like nothing changed or whatever. Which is
by and large, that's been what I've heard. They're reopening Wisconsin, and a pox on that place, man. We can't go there. We can't fucking go there.
Yeah,
it's. I can tell we're basically fucked at this point, because people are not taking any of the same precautions. At least the ones that I've been seeing out, as far as like masks are maybe like 50-50 at this point.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, it's not. And people are still just sloppy messes, leaving shit all over the place. And it's not a great sign for beating this thing when
people can't pick up after themselves.
Yeah. It's like, if you're a mess out in public, what the fuck are you at home?
Mm-hmm.
And good point. That's the...
Too horrific to consider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, our stuff is still the same. Requiring masks, all that kind of stuff. Not for people coming in, but, you know, for the people working there at least, which still... Like, trying to go into the door and somebody's sneaking around behind me, and I'm like, I wanted to yell back the fuck up, dude. And, you know, not being able to as I'm on the job. I'll tell people just, you know, fuck off. Get away from me.
I don't like that. You shouldn't be put in a position where you're sacrificing your personal safety for somebody else's profit, which we've all been talking about this whole time anyway.
And for other people to buy their shit.
I'm just waiting for more people to realize that it's a self-defense issue at this point.
Yeah. It is. And it's time we start acting like it, frankly.
Yeah. I was rewatching some Last Week Tonight stuff, and definitely episode about so-called essential workers. And how they're not really being treated like such. And saw a good video on Twitter of like one of those elaborate cooking in 2-minute video, but showing like, here's essential workers cooking with all the help, all the applause they're getting. It's this cooking video of, no ingredients or anything. It's like, just going through the motions for cooking and all this, and it's fucking nothing.
Yeah, have you actually heard
there's
that?
A scene in Shuffle that would be a good analogy for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of, cooking, have you guys noticed that apparently from what I've been reading, most people have actually started eating healthier now because of all this. Because apparently a lot of people have actually started cooking for themselves instead of like having to go out.
Maybe. There's still a lot of that happening here in my own house, but also everywhere else that I'm hearing about. I don't know.
We just suck. Yeah, it's just this sucks, man. Yeah. God damn it.
Oh, yeah. And Last Week Tonight, if you haven't watched the Postal Service one, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Take a good 20 minutes and watch that one. It's good.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah,
everything they do is good, man. Everything they do is good.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when he is showing how far he's going off the deep end, being in isolation. Wanting one of the paintings from what Larry Kudlow's wife, but only offering like $100
for it
compared to $1,000 for the Rat Erotica painting.
Yeah.
But then offering like $20,000 to a food bank of their choice, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I forget what the most recent one he was doing in that, the most recent episode, what he was, his obsession was, but yeah, that's been kind of the thing there, but managed to watch some things here and there. I finished the last episode of Middle Ditch and Swartz, the improv series featuring Thomas Middle Ditch and Ben Schwartz, and it's probably the best one because they – so the what they do is they kind of do an informal interview with one of the – somebody in the audience, they ask a question, and when they get an interesting answer, they talk to them, find out more about the thing they suggested and that kind of stuff. This one essentially involved a little bit of SNL, what modern interviewing is as far as like video interviewing, but not to actual people. Some places do, and it's like a lot of ridiculous shit that they do in this last episode. It's a lot of fun. At a certain point, they forget whose character is who. Whatever they're doing. It's some great stuff. And also watched the new Kimmy Schmidt special, the interactive one. It was the first one of those I've done on Netflix, and it was fun. It was also weird in terms of like trying to watch something and be like, oh, I also have to click on one of these options. And getting a couple of fail states in it that was pretty interesting. One, I just didn't click on anything. And whatever it picked, or if I didn't pick one, it just failed me, which involved bringing back one of the characters that wasn't in the special to talk about breaking the fourth wall and then like rebuilding the wall in front of the camera, that kind of thing, and then getting to one of the last interactive parts of the special. And picking a couple ones that went way wrong for what I thought. One that led to, they both led to some pretty interesting alternate endings, but then you get to the real one, which is pretty good. And then you have a little thing at the end, and I guess it lets you restart just automatically instead of just like ending it, which was weird. So I had to actually back out of it. To be done with it. But yeah, those are pretty good. Wasn't going to start She-Ra because the new season's out, but ran out of time on that. And yeah, so I got my internal capture card. I got that put into my PC, not before I fucking knocked off all the shit on top of it, which included a bowl that I had change in, which is fun, but also proceeded me to actually finally get around to start working on moving my desk around and doing some of the stuff I planned on doing earlier this year before shit completely went sideways. And yeah, so I moved it over into a corner of the room. I ended up not streaming on Sunday because I was literally doing this like right before I was supposed to start. And it's like, all right, this, I'm a sweaty mess. We're not streaming. Because I need to get this shit under control. And got it there. Got to do some more cleaning for streaming tomorrow. But it's in a pretty good spot now. Just got to clean up some stuff. But the new card works pretty well. It's not quite 100% lag-free, but it's like 99% there. Which is fine. End up streaming City Skylines. Sort of following doing Farming Sim 19. Played some of that. And by the end of the stream, my town was running out of money. Going deep into the red. I was like, all right, I guess it's a good place to go because this town isn't salvageable. That kind of thing. But that's still a fun game. Works pretty well as long as you don't fuck up like I did and overbuild some things. But yeah, let's see. There's also played some more Assassin's Creed Odyssey with the Valhalla stuff. Seeing that kind of got me back in the mood for it. Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Working on some quests. There's one that's called Prince of Persia that I was like, oh, that's interesting. Once I finished like the stuff I had in the town I was in, I went to go check that out, which was in like one of the early areas you're in. It's a dude that's basically asking you to go to these specific locales and tell him about it because he is like an old beggar that's gone blind, I guess. And so he wants to know about him. What have I already been to? So I got to talk to him about that and gave me some other stuff to do. And then went and did some... I've forgotten I had this whole cultist thing that was part of it. It's a web of cultists that I can... Once you get enough information on... some of them you can just go and take them out if they're of reasonable level for you to be able to kill them. And I had one nearby. It's like, all right, I'll go murder this person for being a cultist. And did that, did another quest that was with somebody that I guess was I'd met before. Proceeded to push the romance angle the entire time as much as I could.
Yeah, just do that with everybody you meet.
So she's just constantly like, you know, before we do that, how about we go inside and have a little bit of fun? And it's like, oh, no, I need to get this taken care of. And they're like, well, we could push that. And, yeah, go inside and get busy. It's,
dude, it's ancient Greece. Yeah. Everybody was buggering everybody back then.
Yeah, eventually. It's like, eventually we did it, but not before I had to kill some people.
Oh, yeah.
And do some other stuff there. But, yeah, that game's a lot of fun. Besides the fact there's, like, a billion quests in it.
Yeah, that game has way too much content.
Like, and there's, like, specific spots where you can just generate new quests. Like a Skyrim kind of thing. Where it's like, I don't need... I got, like, 15 already on my list. If it isn't providing any, like, interesting story or loot stuff, I'm not... bothering with this stuff because I have stuff that's like kill these legendary animals and those are fucking hard as hell. I went took on one that was right around my level, maybe like one or two levels below it, and got fucked up. It was like a stag elk or something like that. I think I took down a bear earlier, and that was like 30 minutes of a fight with an animal, which is not especially great. But yeah, that game's a lot of fun. Also playing some more Animal Crossing New Horizons. Managed to sell my turnips for a decent profit. Then I found out when I got home from work that the price went up. I was like, oh
God.
I sold them because I was like, well, these are above. I have no idea if this is going to go up or down. I could have... changed my time zone and gone ahead a little bit more, but it was also right before I had to go to work, so I was like, I don't have time to fuck around with this. But I sold them and made a profit at least. Because last time around, just because of how busy I was at work, I did not see any times that was above what I paid for it, so I had to find some nice person on the internet to help me out. So they were just watching a KK Slider performance in their town. It's like, I send out codes to people and they can go do their thing, whatever. It was either that or sell them for half of what I paid for, which is not great. Either way, but yeah, so now I got like 600K in the bank. I think we went from like 160 something like 250 over the course of a day, but it's not really that big of a deal. I had my first face-off with a scorpion. One of my villagers was just like fucking around with it near a house. It was really weird. And I went to try and figure out how to approach it. And then it started taking off after me. I fucking had to dart all around the island and get me a good spot and managed to catch it first time. So that was
shit.
Pretty good there. Managed to take a video of it. I'll see if I can find it for you, Teresa, but it went pretty well. And yeah, trying to figure out what to do with my house. I just leave shit all over the place, and then the Happy Home Associations told me I had an A house, so I was like, I don't know what the fucking point of all this is. I'm just like, fucking, it's a mess. But it was an A-rated mess, so I was like, why? I don't need to be any more better with this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you need S rank.
Well, I'll get there eventually. Just put enough good shit in there, and it'll be good.
Do you have all the rooms?
I got 3 rooms.
Okay.
I got a room that's a ska room right now.
Yeah,
I just have once KK you get all ska the rooms, playing.
Yeah, it's easier to get like the higher scores once you got all the rooms.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to pay off right now.
Okay.
But yeah, that's been fun. I somehow have come into possession of 2 giant hat beds. There's these beds that are like baseball hats,
mm-hmm.
but they're just like giant, and I'm like, why is this a thing in this game?
Ugh, they're so ugly. And I made a mistake of giving one to a villager, and he still has it right in the middle of his fucking house.
I got 2 different ones, which is weird. There's 2 of them.
It looks like those cheap little hats that you would get at the ballpark that have like fucking ice cream in it or something.
Yeah.
That's what they look like.
But they're giant, and they're beds you can sit on.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, sure. There's nice stuff in here. There's bound to be tacky stuff.
Yes.
But yeah, that's been fun. Definitely going to put some more time into it because I need to actually go to other islands.
On the miles tickets
because I have 60,000 miles because they just keep giving them to me. I just got the one for making 3 friends on the island. I was like, 3? That's small compared to every other of these like challenges where it's like, all right, next one, you got to get 10 times whatever you got before. And it's just like, you got to make 3 friends. I had like 2 of my villagers ask to move and I was like, no. I saw that there's a tier list of villagers, which is a weird concept in itself.
Well, the
then I found out all of mine are unranked on it. I was like, all right, we're just the loser island.
Yeah, there are definitely favorites and the dreamies is
people
what they
are,
call
like,
it.
Paying for them actual money.
Like no, this. Well,
or like I don't know what NMTs are. I've seen that when I was looking at islands.
Nook Mile tickets. It's Nook Mile tickets, yeah. That's not really paying for it. Now, the shit that I did where I sent my brother to meet this guy at Fristo's that I used to go to high school with 12 of my duplicate Animal Crossing Amiibo cards and a $100 bill, that's paying for them. And I will fucking have Cherry in my town by this time next week, believe me.
I like having my weirdos for the reject island.
But yeah, if you have somebody in boxes and it's a villager that someone wants, yeah, you could say, hey, give me 3 gold nuggets or 10 Nook Mile tickets.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Doing that for just come to the island for selling turnips.
Yeah. I pay that.
Fucking bullshit. I see.
Are you on Turnip Exchange? Is that where you're going? Just link up your Discord and shit. You're good to go.
I'm not that into this game. I'm not min-maxing anything.
Oh, okay.
I'm fucking going natural.
Okay.
Most unnatural thing I have is, I don't know, the fucking forest I have of fruit trees.
That's,
yeah. Then I got flowers just randomly all over the place. But the bamboo I have in the random corner of the island is... This island is basically just me like, oh, I got to plant this thing. Okay, this is an empty spot. Here we go.
You got to come to my island, dude. It's not done.
I got
done,
a pile of recipes that I can't use because I already know them. And I don't want to sell them or throw them away or whatever. Like maybe somebody will come and they won't have these and they can take them.
Yeah, there's the drop one, take one thing. I did this yesterday. The next time I have... I have a DIY recipe exchange. I'll tell you beforehand. I'll find out when you're not working, and I'll make sure you could come first.
Yeah. And my schedule's not great until week after next.
Yeah.
It is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm just dropping them in my workshop now, so.
And you go into people's houses, and they're working on stuff. You get a free thing that way.
Yep.
And you also feel weird. Like, this person's working on something. You just barge in their house. I'm like, hey, give me that recipe. This game is just... This is the stupidest game ever made. Because people said this was okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally okay.
Yeah, this game's just fucking weird as hell.
I just caught a snapping turtle. I agree with you.
Yeah, I got one and I put it... It's my pet sitting next to the door when you come in. Nice. That's what people do. They put their snapping turtles inside. That's the only pet you can have that isn't sitting in like a tank or something.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought they were making models elf.
No, those are actual snapping turtles sitting on the ground.
All right.
So, yeah, that's you catch them out of a river at night. it's a weird thing. But yeah, also been playing Round Guard. I got that on one of the recent PSN sales, which if you like Peggle, that's a roguelike Peggle as an RPG kind of, which is pretty good. The roguelike part is kind of like, I forget what it is, the card game that came out last year. But that is kind of what it is, where you kind of just see a map. It's kind of paths going across as you go towards the final boss in the area. You're taking out these different enemies that are laid out, along with pots and some vials of health potion and mana potion. So you're kind of just trying to take out all the enemies, at least. You don't have to hit everything if you don't want to. But I think by the end of the game, or whenever you die, whatever... it takes stock of how much gold you have and puts it on like a wheel to determine if you get a good like perk for the next run, that kind of thing. And so it kind of keeps it going like that for each time. Mostly it's been pretty good so far, but it's a little bit more dry than Peggle and doesn't have that kind of elation you get at the end of a Peggle stage. You're just like, oh my god, we just beat this. This is I'm the greatest person that's ever played games. That kind of feeling you get at the end of Peggle stages.
Mm-hmm.
This one doesn't quite have that. You're just like, oh my god, I survived that. I'm not that stupid. Okay. And that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Okay, well, first and foremost, yeah, I'm still playing Valkyria Chronicles. Actually getting pretty close to the end now. I'm at the Citadel, which is basically like the massive like fortress that sort of borders the Imperial Alliance and Gallia. It's one of them. They have like a whole series of them that the Empire has all through the border. And basically getting ready to straight up just sort of have the final showdown. It's really weird going back and playing this, having also played Valkyria Chronicles 4, which actually is basically about that universe is sort of... basically that universe is like equivalent of like D-Day and the Western Front. And... where you actually like go well into Imperial territory, and you realize that, like, considering what actually goes down in Valkyria Chronicles 1 and Valkyria Chronicles 4, the developers really had a weird time trying to parcel out like the magnitude of the conflicts between the two, because the Gallian Front by itself is supposed to be like a minor part of the overall war. And yet that also happens to be where you actually start seeing like fucking actually Valkyria with like Valkyrian powers actually showing up. And like you get this idea like they never intended to actually like actually go and make other Valkyria Chronicles games, because by the time Valkyria Chronicles 4 happens, you're basically like the big, you not only end up seeing like another Valkyria come into play, but you've also got like a battleship that ends up managing to make its way like into the middle of the Empire's fucking capital building. I mean, not capital building, but capital city. And it's like the whole, the severity of it is all fucking out of whack. But yeah, the last parts of Valkyria Chronicles are notorious for how they raise the stakes up to a point where it's like, yeah, this is like way too big for what's basically a border dispute. Yeah, it's a good game. Other than that, I am playing Sakura Wars. Both of them. And by both of them, I mean both the newer one, which is currently loading on my PS4, and the original, which I'm now playing on a Sega Saturn emulator on my PC, with the full English translation. And, yeah, both of those games are really fucking good. Just need to like tell people what Sakura Wars is. It's basically a combination of like strategy RPG / I don't want to necessarily call it a dating sim, but it's definitely a bit of a dating sim.
The elements are there.
Yeah. It's basically like an alternate history story of where like right around the time of the Taisho period, which for those who don't know what the Taisho period is, the Taisho period is basically the period between the Meiji Restoration and the foundation and the beginning of the Showa era. And you guys know who Showa is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just say it out loud. Who is it?
Hirohito.
Yeah. Emperor Showa. That was Emperor Hirohito, as the rest of the world knew him. And between then and there was what's known as the Taisho era. It's basically, it's about roughly from 1912 to 1926. Well, Christmas of 1926. So roughly about 14 years. And it's basically sort of considered to be this odd sort of period where you're seeing sort of the Japanese sort of nation trying to sort of shift over towards a more sort of Western constitutional style of governance. But at the same time, there's this like there's this like growing like, you can see it like happening in the background, this growing like group of like military extremists that end up more or less dominating the Showa era up until, you know, the end of World War II. It's also when, you know, the Imperial Diet, you know, their Congress or their Parliament or whatever you want to call it, starts sort of like trying to insert itself into the insert itself as a power after what's essentially been an oligarchy after the Meiji Restoration. Then in 1923, a bunch of fucking demons show up in the middle of Tokyo.
See, now the timeline doesn't work quite so well.
Yeah. It's like, there you go. That's how Sakura War starts. Basically, in the 1920s, in the middle of the Taisho era, the fucking demons show up. And now you have to have a military unit called the Imperial Combat Review, which basically is dedicated to fighting all of the supernatural threats using steam-powered mecha, while at the same time are maintaining their cover as a theater troupe.
Mm-hmm.
Because fucking Japan. And this ended up being like one of Sega's most popular franchises in Japan.
Yep.
And
rightfully so.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, it's good. And what happened is they decided, I think last year, well, not last year, but I think it was like they started developing this, I think sometime around 2017.
Yeah, it had to be right around the time Bleach ended.
Yeah, and there's a reason for that. It's because Tide Kubo ended up taking over Kosuke Fujishima as the art director.
Which was a brilliant decision by Sega.
Yeah, for those who don't know who Fujishima is, he's the guy behind Ah My Goddess. If you grew up as an anime fan in the 90s, you know that fucking franchise.
Yeah.
And
Run the One Half was my gateway drug, though.
Yeah, and then he basically retired from the franchise after it kind of went dormant, and then they decided to bring in Tite Kubo and as the art director for what is basically, they call it a reboot, but it's really a sequel. Because the whole idea about the Sakura Wars, about the new series, I guess they're establishing now, is they call it New Sakura Wars in Japan. For those who don't know, basically it's in 1940, basically the old sort of Imperial Combat Review that existed, the ones that you experience in the old games has basically disbanded because after the events of So Long, My Love, which is the only Sakura Wars game that has actually gotten an official release stateside.
Way back on the PS2 and the Wii.
Yeah. I have the Wii version, by the way. Basically 2 years after that, during the Great Demon War, which is like this whole thing where the demons suddenly show up during this period, that's what it's called. Basically they get their asses kicked, and basically the whole review is sort of scattered to the winds. Now you do see like a couple of the old members showing up. Specifically, the one that is most significant is what's her name? I'm trying to remember what her name is. One of the original members of the original Combat Review basically ends up taking over as the new manager / commander, whatever you want to call it. The head of it, basically. She ends up sort of taking over the place of the original guy that was the head of it, and you're sort of the new captain that is the person you're playing. And basically you're assembling a new review from a bunch of various other views you get. You end up recruiting some reviews from some members from new members for the review. You also recruit some new members from the New York division and two from the Berlin division. And gameplay wise, it's a bit more of an action oriented game, but it still keeps like all of the visual novel / dating sim type stuff. It's quite good. It didn't get as good of a, I guess it didn't get as good of a reaction in Japan because, well, fucking Japanese gamers are traditional as fuck. They don't like change. It's gotten a much better reaction over here in the U.S. So, let's see. Other than that, I'm still reading. Nothing really new on that front. And as far as anime is concerned, I've finally started, because I recently restarted my subscription over at Funimation. So I started watching a little bit of season 2 of Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Dinothes. I also started watching, I can't remember what the full title is. It's something Bruhara. It's another Studio B Train anime. The same people who did Noir. It's technically a spiritual successor of Madlax, which in turn was a spiritual successor to Noir. Whereas Noir was more of like a conspiracy theory type anime, and Madlax is more of like a psychological thriller type thing. Ruhara is more of a romance between these two young women, in between a bunch of gunfights. So, you know, right up my fucking alley. Yeah. Basically, it takes like all of the shoujo-y subtext of the first two anime and just makes it a bit more out in the open. I'm not sure if Noir is actually on Crunchyroll. I know it's on Funny Munchkin. You might want to look that up, Pat, because that's another one I recommend.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you also put Dino Thieves on there because you knew I was going to fucking recommend it anyway.
Yeah, I just got ahead of the curve there.
Yeah. But that's about it. We got anything we want to add before we move on?
I just went back and looked at part of one of my hockey videos from the other night, and I'm actually kind of surprised that Twitch didn't ban me for something that came out of my mouth in one of those videos in the innuendo sense, but...
But okay, all righty then. Well then... It is now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, tonight I thought we'd talk a little bit about hoaxes, or specifically photographic hoaxes. So in this day and age, do you think it is easier or more difficult to be able to get it away with, say, a photographic hoax?
A photographic versus deepfake. Everybody thinks everything is Photoshopped.
So yeah, that's what I was going to say. Photoshop is like really easy to get a hold of now, but it's like really difficult to do authentically. And like the technology that's needed to actually prove if something is Photoshopped or not is so ubiquitous and easy to use that it's, I guess in this day and age, it's damn near impossible, wouldn't you say?
Well, unless you're really, really good.
Well, like I said, to do it successfully,
yeah,
it's impossible almost. But obviously, back in the old days when photography was a relatively new medium and a relatively new technology, it was a lot easier to just sort of in general fool people, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And considering, sort of the, I forgot how to breathe. I do that sometimes. I don't know if anybody who's watched this show, extensively now at this point, I have a tendency to talk so much that I forget to breathe like midway through.
Well, the good news to that is that if you do pass out, your body will remember for you.
Yeah.
And you'll come back.
Yeah. But back in the old days, of course, when, Photoshop and just photo manipulation in general was, it may have been easier for people to fool with it. And that partly has to do with the fact, if you think about like how long it actually took to actually take a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about, like, in the old days, the kind of, like processing and stuff involved it took to actually, do a photograph. You had to, like, if you were taking a photograph of a person, they had to, like, stand in place, for a while. You had to get the whole thing set up. There was, like, a powder and shit you had to put in that tray to hold up, and you had to get under the cover and everything. Like, there's all these, like, really creepy photographs back in the old days of, like, if they were trying to take a photograph of, like, toddlers or babies or something. And toddlers and babies are naturally, like, very fidgety. Mm-hmm. And so there's, like, all these old photographs of, like, you know, they're technically supposed to be taking photographs of the children, but they need, like, you know, a mother or a wet nurse or somebody nearby to make sure they hold in place. So they usually have, like, a wet nurse or a mother or somebody who's in the photograph, but they're covered with, like, a black shawl. Mm-hmm. So it basically looks like all these young kids are basically taking a photograph with the woman in black. But there was another thing, of course, that was going on around that time, and there was a little movement known as spiritualism. Do you guys know what spiritualism is?
By the
total crock of shit.
Well, I mean, yeah, it was a total crock of shit.
By the dictionary definition, but I'm guessing you're referring to something more specific.
Like Edward Casey and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, seances, that type of shit.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
The belief that the spirits of the dead existed and just sort of hung around and that people could talk with them. So think, you know, crystal balls, Ouija boards, spirit writing, that type of shit. And the thing about this is that because spiritualism kind of opened up the floodgates to a bunch of other bullshit, it meant that a lot of people also believed in the quote-unquote supernatural world, like elves and fairies and mermaids and that type of shit.
Woo.
Oh my god, are you going to talk about the fairy photographer?
Well, specifically a little something known as the Cottingley fairies.
Oh my god, I'm sorry, I totally gave it away.
No, honestly, anybody who's listening to this probably kind of understood what I was talking about when I brought up spiritualism, because it's directly tied into this shit. But okay, yes, yeah, so, back in, I think it's believed to have been sometime between 1917. And it involves these two girls, Elsie Wright and her little sister, Frances Griffith. Well, not little sister, just a young friend of hers, Frances Griffith. They were cousins, and they lived in a place known as Cottingley near Bradford, in England. And, in 1917, they came up with this fun little idea. It's like, what if we took a bunch of photographs and we pretended that there were fairies in them? And it's like, okay, so what did they do? Well, let me just show you. This is the first and probably the most famous of these photographs that were taken. There was a series of five of them that were taken. The first two in 1917, they would take a couple more, I think three more over the next couple of years. But this is the first one. All right, you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, that was the first one that was taken. If you go to that link to the Wikipedia article, they've got the other four that you can see. Honestly, to be frank, the other four are better staged, to be honest. Because that first one looks fake as fuck, let's be honest. What happens is right around 1920, I believe, these pictures managed to get into the hands of a certain gentleman that you may have heard of by the name of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Oh, yeah, we've heard of him.
Yeah, you guys know who he is, right?
Oh, yeah.
He was a fairly prolific author back in the day, and he's most famous for creating a certain detective you may have heard of named Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, very drug-addled detective.
Mm-hmm. Who famously was killed off in one of his stories and then brought back in another story because he was inundated with hate mail.
For real.
Yeah. And the thing you got to understand about Conan Doyle is he had recently suffered a rather nasty tragedy. He had, I think it was right around, I think it was like right around 1907. His first wife, Louisa, suffered and died from tuberculosis. And all five of his children would eventually end up dying without issue. So he had no grandchildren or direct descendants, unfortunately. So with all of that, you can probably imagine the man was kind of in grief, and he was kind of searching around for anything that could sort of help, I guess, ease the pain, you know, other than, you know, injecting cocaine into yourself. He came across the spiritualist movement. And so he started, you know, having a bunch of seances and stuff with mediums who claimed that they were contacting his late wife and all that. And he kind of got taken advantage of. And keep in mind that Doyle, on top of being a fairly prolific author, was also a licensed medical doctor. So he was very much a man of science. And he was also a bit of an amateur detective in his own right as well. So he was also a man of reason, which is why it makes all of this all the more ironic that he fell for such obvious bullshit. Because in 1920, he specifically wrote an article for the Christmas edition of the Strand magazine. And he actually took these photographs and he interpreted them as, quote, clear and visible evidence of psychic phenomena. Ugh. Now, just for the record, even back then, there was a bunch of people who were calling bullshit, including a certain individual you may have known as Harry Houdini. But that's another story. Now, he did not give up on this shit. In fact, he went to his grave basically defending these photographs as authentic. He even wrote a whole book on the subject of, I think he called it like the hidden world or something like that. Specifically as a defense of this bullshit. Let's see. I know he has one around here somewhere. But yeah, it was basically like, this is an otherwise knowledgeable individual who basically in his grief fell for a bunch of bullshit. And it's kind of sad, honestly. Let's see, what was it called? He actually wrote multiple books. The Coming of the Fairies, The Case for Spirit Photography, The Edge of the Unknown, The History of Spiritualism. Yeah, The Vital Message. He wrote a bunch of shit on this. And it's so amazing to look back at this and look back at it now, because one of the surviving sisters, many years later, basically admitted that the whole thing was a fucking hoax. And not only did she admit that it was a fucking hoax, she actually showed how they did it. And this is just showing from, like, the first photograph alone. This photograph right here. I know it shows it. The other photograph on the link, just click on it. You'll get the actual picture. Basically, what they did was they took a bunch of illustrations from a popular children's book at the time called Princess Mary's Gift Book. And they traced over a bunch of the illustrations. They added some watercolors and they did the whole thing on cardboard. They then cut them out and then they would place them on like string, or they would like stand it up with like a weight or something. And then they would take these pictures. And with that picture I showed, you can fairly clearly see, you know, the pieces that they traced over, they used to make these little little cardboard cutouts. In an interview, Elsie, who of course was the younger, said that she and Francis were too embarrassed to admit the truth after fooling Doyle. She said, quote, "Two village kids and a brilliant man like Conan Doyle, well, we could only keep quiet." She said, "I never even thought of it as being a fraud. It was just Elsie and I having a little bit of fun. I can't understand to this day why they were ever taken in, why they wanted to be taken in, why anyone wanted to take them seriously." Yeah. So, yeah, that's like one of the most famous instances of like a photographic hoax.
Yeah.
And one that to this day, there are still people who absolutely believe 100% that they're authentic.
Yeah.
No joke.
Well, you know what they say about denial.
Yeah. It's not a river, not just a river in Egypt.
Yeah. Because you got to remember the technology of cameras back then would let you hide a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of like composite photographs that were made that actually to this day still fools a lot of people. Like there's a composite photograph that you'll see, especially like Civil War era stuff, where they'll take like a bunch of composite photographs of like various figures and then make it look like they're in the same room for like the same event when they're actually like pieces of several different photographs put together.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was the Cottingley Fairies, one of the most famous photographic hoaxes of all time, and that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay, so with that out of the way, it is now time to start off the show proper, and as always, we have to talk about our assholes of the week, and prepare yourselves, folks, because we got a few. First and foremost, we have to start about Donald Trump, who... I don't know why, but he seemed exceptionally pathetic this week. Basically, he was trying to give sort of a little victory round speech because, you know, now we're opening the country back up against, you know, the wishes of the likes of Dr. Fauci. Yeah. And basically, he more or less spent the whole thing yelling about something called Obamagate, which he refuses to actually... go into details on.
Go ahead. Keep on.
He asked an Asian American reporter to quote talk to China.
Yeah, because he keeps making this whole thing a competition.
Yeah,
in countries.
And then finally, he actually had a tantrum and it ended up ending the whole thing early when a CNN reporter actually doubled down on trying to ask him to like actually. Make, you know, detail shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go more in detail, because it's a shit show.
Yeah, there's lots of videos here. Andrew Parr does this for most of his press conferences. The Obamagate one, they had Philip Rucker of, Washington Post, basically asked, you appeared to accuse Obama of a crime yesterday. So on Sunday, he was just going off on Obamagate on Twitter, which most normal people are like, what the fuck are you talking about? He asked, you appear to accuse Obama of crime yesterday. What did he do? Trump, Obamagate. Rucker, what is the crime? You know what the crime is. The crime is very obvious to everybody.
It's not.
Just check out the newspapers. Obviously not yours. Yeah, which is...
Like, what
I also love
do?
This whole setup for these press conferences now because they don't have somebody handing it out because it's, you know, social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a mic set up and these people can keep asking follow-up questions whether he wants them or not. What's her name? Weijia Zhang works at CBS News. And she said, why is this a global competition to you when Americans are losing their lives every day? Trump, maybe that's a question you should ask China. Weijia, why are you saying that to me specifically?
Yeah.
Trump, I'm saying it to anybody who would ask a nasty question like that. It's like, it's not a nasty question. It's really, he's been talking about how we're winning this. And it's like, the only way we're winning is in terms of the number of people dying and catching it. It's not – there's no winning here. And, yeah, the last one was Caitlin Collins of CNN went to go up to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
This is, like, right at the end of Weijia's questions. She goes to ask a question, and she goes and steps up and is about to ask, and he's like, next question, you know, to somebody else. And she's like – what are you doing? I was about to ask you a question. She's like, oh, you took too long.
Mm.
Oh, my God.
She's like, oh, but you called on me. She's like, he's like, you didn't respond, so I'm going to the next person. She keeps insisting. And he's like, all right, you know what? We're done. And just leaves.
Wow.
You know, the supposed victory press conference where he's not wearing a mask or anything, he stormed out.
Yeah.
He got mad that people were asking actual questions.
Yeah.
And this is the person that's supposed to be leading us through all this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's leading. Not effectively.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, leading us right to the gallows.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't the only asshole we had this week. The other asshole we had is Elon fucking Musk, who sued Alameda County over a lockdown order. Because, you know, he was fixing to open up a Tesla factory there. And then he said, fuck it, I'm going to open up the factory anyway.
Yep. Suing them over this, he went on a tirade on Twitter about all this. Yeah, so they sued on Saturday. Federal lawsuit against Alameda County. He's also threatened to relocate Tesla's headquarters out of California. And suggested he might move manufacturing from there as well. County officials said they're negotiating with Tesla on a plan to reopen the plant more fully, but he said he would be at the factory online with everyone else. If anyone is arrested, he tweeted, I said it'd only be me. It's like, yeah, you should be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
You're violating, lockdown orders.
Yeah, he's seems like he lost might, his mind at this point.
Yeah. People that, didn't come to the realization he's a psychopath are starting to, maybe, depending on how bought in you are on Tesla and all that. Because here's the thing, despite him having the reputation of being their founder, he's not actually the founder.
No, of course
paid
not.
Paid for that role. Paid for the rights to call himself that from the actual founders. He came on later.
I still stand by what I said on Facebook, and somebody's like, he can't be because he's a rags to riches story. He's a spoiled fucking brat. He's an executive spoiled ass brat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Trump has a lot of that too. They are used to everybody doing exactly what they fucking say, even when it's the wrong thing to do. And nobody calls them on their shit.
Nope.
They're Why living in a little bubble. Yeah. They still want to get their paycheck. But yeah, right. Why should they?
Mm-hmm.
But didn't the state of California tell him to go fuck himself?
Probably.
Probably.
Or one of their federal representatives. Thought I read something to that effect this week.
Yeah. And then, of course, we had a bunch of folks in Colorado. Colorado restaurant decided, okay, we're going to, in Colorado, they're opening back up. And so is restaurants like, let me restart that. What happened was, basically, there's this restaurant in Colorado.
CNC Breakfast and Korean Kitchen in Castle Rock.
Yeah, yeah. And basically, the governor had put out a safe-at-home order, and this restaurant said, fuck you, we're going to have people come in. And on Mother's Day, they ended up having a packed house, and somebody took video of it. And so they were forced to shut down.
Yeah, by the Tri-County Health Departments.
Like shut down? Like they're out of business for a while?
Let's see. Infinite closure for hazardous health conditions. They'll jeopardize their patron. Let's see. I don't know what the actual result is of this. I'm not sure what the... They're just closed for the time being.
Basically, they're just assholes because it's like, dude, there's a stay-at-home order, and you're making a packed house and putting your employees at risk. Not to mention all those other people.
People are putting their fucking mothers at risk. I mean, What?
Yeah.
Why would you go try to kill your mother on Mother's Day?
Yeah, the restaurant's account on Saturday tweeted, "We are standing for America, small businesses, the Constitution, and against the overreach of our governor in Colorado."
Oh my God. This is me making the world's biggest jack-off motion. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, let's see. The guy that owns it said, let's see, I think, no. Okay, let's see, there's this guy, where is this person from? I don't know. Another small business owner, I think. Unless I'm thinking of something else. It says, I think that people want to work, they want to live. We live with danger every day. People go to war, that's a risk. People drive every day, that's a risk. It's like not as direct a risk
as... This is going to become a self-defense issue, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And next up, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. They have actually overturned the stay-at-home order. That's bad enough. But you know what they actually decided to cite as an example of why they overturned it?
Mm-hmm. Is this going to make our blood pressure go up?
World War II era Japanese internment camps.
Yep.
George Takei is already commented on this.
Oh, he's
No, no, not this particular thing. He's already commented. You staying at home watching Netflix for 6 weeks straight is no fucking way similar to me living my childhood in a prison camp. He's already said that.
Yeah. Especially notion they didn't stay at home for internment camps.
Well, he just needs a copy
and
paste.
They had to move out of town, usually.
Yeah, and they lost all their shit. They lost their businesses, their homes. The Japanese Americans lost everything when they got put in there. All their assets were frozen and seized. There's no fucking comparison, which I know you guys know, but I'm still pissed.
Yeah, let's see. It was one of the dissenting justices. Let's see here. Oh, Justice Rebecca Bradley suggests that the order amounted to tyranny. At another point, she referred to Japanese Americans' internment during World War II to back this up.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Fucking cheeseheads.
Fucking baby boomers. God damn it.
And they complain about us being the FIBs? No. No, we keep their fucking state afloat with our tourism dollars. Mm-hmm. Don't call me a fucking Illinois bastard. You guys are stupid.
Yeah. But,
well,
anyway.
At least your leadership is. I don't know if the whole...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And next, final asshole of the week, Brian Adams.
What? What has he done?
I refuse to apologize for him. I'm not doing it.
You don't have to. What has he done?
Okay, so Brian Adams, a.k.a. the poor man's Bruce Springsteen, who had only one good song in his entire fucking career.
No, that's one
thing. No. Sadly. Oh, no. Oh, God, no. Yeah, he's had, like, at least seven.
Mm.
I repeat,
like a nine.
One good song in his entire career.
The only good song he ever made was Summer of 69, and everything else sucks. That's where Brandon is going with this.
But it doesn't suck.
One good song!
But what about his duet with Tina?
No! Shut up! Stop!
What about with Rod
Stewart? No! No! No.
Are you going to get the newspaper and hit me on the nose?
Yes, I am.
What about the from the Johnny Depp movie? It was incredible.
Just stop. You're embarrassing yourself.
Okay, that video was a work of art, though.
Okay,
I will give you that.
The music video to Have You Ever Really Loved a Woman? Great.
Okay, now, he, decided to get super racist on Instagram and ranted on and on about Chinese people.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah, he
ruined it, didn't he?
And he posted a video of a new song, I guess. Cuts Like a Knife. Song by me.
God, that was his first single.
Okay. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only know one song. Says tonight was supposed to be the beginning of a tenancy of gigs at the Royal Albert Hall, but thanks to some fucking bad eating, wet market, animal selling, virus making greedy bastards, the whole world is on hold. Not to mention the thousands that have suffered or died from this virus. My message to them, other than thanks a fucking lot, is go vegan. To all the people missing out on our shows, I wish I could be there more than you know. It's been great hanging out in isolation with whatever. It keeps going.
Oh, he's such a fucking boomer.
it's basically like all the stereotypes and misinformation crap about COVID-19 rolled into one.
It's
amazing. For all the
I'm so glad he's not my dad.
Yeah. They got some stuff from people here. Got a couple of tweets. Brian Adams, racist xenophobic tirade has been up for 10 hours now. Damage has been done. Mm-hmm. And removed it. Lauren said, anybody have Brian Adams' racist meltdown in 2020 is a hot mess pool?
So we got, we had Don Cherry go all racist.
Also, PETA joined in the... Not paying attention to anything else that's going on, said, still enjoying this virtual performance. This is why it's crucial for everyone to go #vegan now to prevent the next pandemic. It's up to us to create a kinder, healthier future for all species.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that when you guys start killing all of the animals in your shelters.
Hmm. It's like, you missed a couple of important parts there.
Yeah.
You just saw a vegan and like, oh yeah, okay, we can do a tweet about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think the moral of the story is that even Canadian boomers are boomers.
Yes. Yeah. We have our fair share of...
Yeah. Yeah, spotty record for musicians.
Mm. Oh, my God.
I mean, you know, Canada has Rush and Budgie and Riot and Anvil and...
Bare Naked
Ladies. April Wine and Bare Naked Ladies and a bunch of great bands. But they also gave us Bryan Adams and Celine Dion.
Yeah. And Neil Young. So there's that.
Well, Neil Young is a good one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ugh. And Anne Murray.
Yeah.
Ugh.
All day. Every day.
So.
Yeah. We have our hero of the week to help get that taste out of our mouths. And who else can get that taste out of our mouths than the king of Flavortown himself, Guy fucking Fieri, who has actually managed to raise...
in the woods not long ago.
Yeah, managed to raise over $20 million for Restaurant Workers Charity.
Yep. Wow.
And he has this, what was it called? I think it's Restaurant Employee Relief Fund. Basically sending it to qualified people that have applied for grants. I think it's like $500 you get. They've sent out 40,000 of them so far. Still working on it, getting more money. Mm-hmm. As noted by the next story that kind of goes with it, that he did a nacho eating battle with Bill Murray today.
Yep.
To help keep raising funds, so... You know, as much as his reputation is not great on the internet, I guess. Yeah.
He's a meme, basically. But... He's basically the only man in America living in a pre-9/11 world.
Yeah. And he's absolutely much better than the reputation that he has on the internet.
Yeah.
He seems to be at least a decent guy.
Yeah.
He's doing good work, and whether you like his food or not, it doesn't really matter. He's helping people out in a time where nobody else is really helping people out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not sure if they had... Let's see what the winner is. I got the video here so you can watch it. But they had Shaq and Terry Crews judging it. Because they were social distancing, so making sure that everything was okay, I guess. I don't know.
Yep.
Hey, fun little event. Keeps going towards his restaurant employee relief fund.
Mm-hmm. All right. And, that's the end of the show proper. And going on from there, we are now in the proper show proper. And unfortunately, as we have had to do more than once, we have to announce a celebrity death. And this one hits particularly close to home because he was from my hometown. R.I.P. Little Richard.
Yep. One of the most influential people in rock and roll history.
Yep. Absolutely. Probably one of the first true rock stars, really.
Him and Chuck Berry.
Yep. He as a musician, he was basically, he got his start as like in, the gospel church type stuff. And, he started doing the more secular songs. And of course, he was famous for just his whole persona. He was, he put on these like really like full throttle performances that kind of defined what a lot of like pop music piano players would do. Like, you can see a lot of him in like Elton John and
Flamboyant.
Yeah, you can see him in like Prince and just a bunch of musicians that came after him. And of course, his whole singing style, he was like a full throated, just all the way forward musician. He was also flamboyant. Yeah, and he was also flamboyant as hell. He wore all those sequined suits, his huge greased pompadour hair. And it shouldn't surprise you that he was also gay as fuck. Because he was. Actually, I think he was bi, but he was definitely playing both sides of the field. And he, it got him into trouble on more than one occasion. Those who don't know this, in the 70s into the early 80s, he retired from music and became a preacher. For a long time, he was a straight up preacher. He preached at a church, I think it was right here in Georgia.
It was probably really hard to be a black man in those days and age, still is, but harder. And then to be a black man who was not straight up homosexual or heterosexual.
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost a death sentence.
And you got to understand something else too. One of the big things with Little Richard was the relationship he had with his father. His dad was like an old school black Southern Christian guy who believed in very, shall we say, tough love.
Uh-oh.
Now, keep in mind that
he routinely beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
I think it was more like very loud yelling that went way over the line from what I think even some people back then would consider appropriate.
Well, now we know where he got the voice from.
Yeah. You have to remember this is a black man growing up in Jim Crow era Georgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, his whole family up to that point had to deal with living in that type of place.
Yeah.
And it reflected in how they raised their children. And there's a story of, because as you can expect, being Little Richard, musically inclined, he was in his church choir.
Mm-hmm.
He had a very, and another thing you can get his style from was the preacher of his church, because his preacher was a old school African American Baptist preacher. And I don't know if you've ever been to a predominantly African American church before, especially here down south, but there is a certain style that is very common there down here.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, I've seen it once or twice too. And you can basically take it two ways. You can either take it as a lot of fun, which it can be, or downright fucking scary and uncomfortable, which I've also experienced myself. And basically, the story goes is that well, there's two stories. One is that his while he was singing in the choir, he was singing an old gospel tune, and he had like a tambourine with him to keep him in time. And of course, he's Little Richard. He's a great singer. And then, like about midway through the song, the music starts to move him, and he starts adding in the oohs and the ahs into the song, which is more typical of like blues and jazz. Mm-hmm. And the preacher ended up ending the song early, and then before he started his sermon, he started about this whole thing about how, you know, when Satan gets in front of you, you need to say, "Get behind me, Satan," and all of this. Yeah. Of course, his dad wasn't particularly happy about it. But he was still very musically inclined, and sometime later, he snuck into the church and got to the piano, and he started singing an old blues standard called Big Leg Girl. And the preacher caught him. And basically, Little Richard's dad went off on him. Basically said, next time, you know, telling the preacher, next time you catch him singing one of these songs, you tell me, I'll make him wish he'd never been born. You know, that type of shit.
Yeah.
And even the preacher was taken aback by it, apparently. And years later, once, you know, Little Richard actually started getting successful and, you know, he started playing the clubs and, you know, he invited his family over to see him play, and his whole family was really impressed, including his mother, who was there to see him. And one of his records was playing on a local club where his dad was drinking. Did I mention that his dad was also a heavy drinker? I probably should have brought that up. And dude walked into the bar. He got in a fight, and he shot him. Dude shot Little Richard's father. Right there in the bar. And, And, yeah. Yeah. So you can imagine that kind of affected him, too. And then eventually, you know, just the drugs and the lifestyle got to him. And sometime in the early 70s, he became a born-again Christian. He decided, I'm going to go start my own church. And, you know, he said, I'm born again because I wanted to be – I didn't want to be, and this is quote, by the way, because there's actually an interview of him when he decided to start doing this. And he said, I wanted to because I, before converting, I was, quote, unnatural, which was homosexual. Yes, that is a quote. And then a few years later, he actually encountered the guy who shot his father in his church. While he was giving a sermon, one of the dudes walked in and he said, I'm the guy who shot your father. Can you ever forgive me? And he said, you know, I don't know if I myself can forgive you because murder is wrong, but blah, 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 Jesus and all that. You know the routine.
Yeah.
But eventually he cooled down, I guess, because by the early 80s he was performing his old standards again. So, yeah.
Wow.
And, oh, yeah, he really got into plastic surgery, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at the photographs. Look at the photographs and understand that is a man in his 80s.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah.
We know.
Yeah, we could tell, dude.
Worst kept secret, seriously.
Yeah. And you ready for the fun part of this? The fun part of all of this?
Mm.
I met him. I met him once.
Oh.
Yeah, I actually met him when he was, I was a teenager. He, cause like I said, he was from here. Yeah. He was born in Macon, and, it was the dedication to the, museum that was going to be dedicated to him. And, me and my mom and dad went there, and he went out in the crowd and, he saw me. And I remember this because here's something you need to know about teenage me. I had a mullet.
Yeah, Missouri Compromise.
Totally acceptable.
Yeah. And let's just say he noticed. He's like, oh, son, what you doing with your hair there? And I'm like, Mr. Richards, well, just decided I wanted it to grow long, but I didn't want to mess around with it too much. And he's he's like, well, son, take my advice. Just take the grease. You'll be fine. He patted me on the shoulder, and then he moved on to the rest of the folks. And that's my Little Richard story.
That's fantastic.
You got trolled by Little Richard. That's amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh, he had a wicked sense of humor. And here's the funny part. The way he was in his concerts is actually pretty common to how he was in everyday life. Hmm. That's just how he was. Brash and out loud.
Yeah.
And of course there's the famous Little Richard yell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he did that just every fucking day of his life. But anyway, rest in peace, Little Richard. Legend in his time, and will remain a legend forever. Mm. All right. So, with that out of the way, it is now to get on to the rest of the show. And as always, we're going to beat back up a new load from the COVID-19 dump truck. And first and foremost, there are now 4.5 million cases worldwide with about 307,000 deaths. In the United States alone, there's 1.44 million cases with 87,500 deaths. We have both the lion's share of and of both the cases and the deaths at this point.
Yep. Yeah, I think we're about six times the second country, which is Russia.
Yeah. Yep. Winning.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We're lapping them now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And President Obama... who, to be honest, considering what he could be doing, has actually been really, really kept under his profile pretty much these last 3 years, if you really think about it.
Yeah. He's let Trump hang himself.
Yeah.
It's a practice in self-restraint, I'm sure.
Yeah. But he basically called Trump's response to the pandemic.
He needs his anger translator back.
Yeah. He basically called Trump's response to the pandemic a, quote, absolute chaotic disaster. And believe me, this is Barack Obama. He could have used far more colorful language, so this is pretty muted for him.
Yeah, I was watching some old SNL skits, and I was watching one with The Rock, where they were positioning him as the, like, when Obama gets really mad, he turns into The Rock version of himself, like the Hulk kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And the joke of the whole thing is like, oh, he's way too even keeled. Mm-hmm. Like, man, that was nice as a president. We had a president like that.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't fly off the handle constantly. But yeah, he was in a conversation with members of the Obama Alumni Association. Said the response to the coronavirus outbreak served as a critical reminder why strong government leadership is needed during a global crisis. It was intended to encourage former Obama staffers to become more engaged in Biden's presidential campaign.
Mm-hmm.
See, this election that's coming up on every level is so important because what we are going to be battling is not just a particular individual or political party. We're fighting against is these long-term trends in which being selfish, being tribal, being divided, and seeing others as an enemy, that has become a stronger impulse in American life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is true. Let's see.
That's
part of the reason why the response to this global crisis has been so anemic and spotty. It would have been bad even with the best of governments. It has been an absolute chaotic disaster when that mindset of what's in it for me and to heck with everybody else, when that mindset is operationalized in our government.
Mm-hmm.
He added, that's why I, by the way, am going to be spending as much time as necessary in campaigning as hard as I can for Joe Biden.
Yeah. And it'll work, too.
It'll move the needle.
Oh yeah, like he Obama is a proven vote getter. Yep. So, but of course the Republicans couldn't keep their mouths shut about it. So Mitch McConnell came forward, called Obama classes for criticizing the Trump administration. But it gets better.
Yeah, he might want to walk this one back.
Yeah, because one of the criticisms he gave Obama is that he claimed Obama didn't leave a pandemic plan behind. Guess what? He did leave a plan behind, a 68-page pandemic plan. And so McConnell had to actually go out and admit that he just lied his ass off.
And it was delicious.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the sort of the notion that presidents don't criticize their successors. I think it was Snopes, mm-hmm. and just basically went back to, I think, the Carter administration. Like, no, here's, like, some examples of them, and they're like, this is by no means an exhaustive list. It's just how much we could fit in here before we felt our point was made.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for fuck's sake, President Hoover was criticizing President Roosevelt all through the New Deal period. He basically went to his grave trying to defend himself during his conduct during the beginnings of the Great Depression. Trust
people
me,
are just trying
they
to make
fucking
it like,
do it.
And people are just treating, acting like the way Bush hasn't really, never really said much about Obama.
Yeah, that's because he was at least smart enough to keep his head down after the goddamn disaster he left behind.
Yeah. He knew the best PR was to
disappear, basically. Yeah. Disappear and make his silly paintings.
Yeah, do his paintings.
Mm-hmm. And this week also, Trump decided to unveil what he called Operation Warp Speed while truckers held a honking protest.
Yeah, which he claimed was were supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Which were not.
Nope.
But yeah, let's see. Warp Speed, Operation Warp Speed. Compare the effort to the Manhattan Project, the World War II effort to build the first nuclear weapon.
Wow, that's a good comparison there, Trumpy boy.
As he said here, that means big and it means fast. We have the military totally involved. Well, let's see. They're going to accelerate the development of a vaccine and medical treatments for the coronavirus by January. We're looking to get it by the end of the year if we can, maybe before. As everybody around him was wearing masks. Let's see, but experts have noted that a timeline of even 12 to 18 months is optimistic. The first FDA-approved vaccine for the Ebola virus was not until December 2019. So at a peak in outbursts between 2014 and 2016. Present, there are 14 promising vaccine candidates, Trump said, noting that it would be risky and expensive, but the federal government plans to invest in manufacturing the top candidates even before they are approved to eliminate any delay once approval happens.
What could possibly go wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Just like that stockpile of hydroxychloroquine.
Yep.
That's basically nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Trump said the United States will work with other countries, even China, on the project to develop, manufacture, and distribute a vaccine quickly. They're viewing us as the leader, and the relationship with other countries on solving this problem has been incredible. We'll be very happy if they are able to do it. Speaking about, generally about other countries working on vaccines for the virus, we have no ego when it comes to this, which I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, no.
This man is ego incarnate.
He is not capable of not having an ego. It is wired in his DNA.
Yeah.
Just look at the rest of his fucking family.
I mean, just before that, he was bragging about other countries viewing us as the leader.
Yeah, no.
See, then there, yeah. Trump's remarks in the Rose Garden were accompanied by loud honking from nearby protesting truckers. Mm-hmm. That's the sign of love, not the sign of your typical protest. President said the truckers have been protesting for nearly 2 weeks against what they say are low pay rates. Neither against nor in support of Trump, the group has requested a meeting with the president. According to media reports, and they have a video here at the end with so you can hear the honking.
Yeah,
which is pretty loud.
Yeah. Next up, the House of Representatives have voted to allow remote voting during the pandemic and lead up to the new relief bill. Basically against the cries of all the fucking Republicans who are like, no, we can't do that. That might mean we'll lose elections. We'll never have another Republican administration again. Yeah, that's good. By design.
This is for the House voting.
Yeah.
So that the people in the Congress can kind of stay safe, but
yeah,
without having to risk themselves. But it's passed 208 to 199. Republicans all opposed it. Some moderate and progressive Democrats also opposed it. 14 Democrats crossed party lines to vote against it, and one Republican voted in favor. So stands, and this is the largest relief package so far. $3 trillion is what they're looking at.
Yep.
Details are a bit sketchy because they're still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of stuff for small businesses, medical field stuff, as well as new checks. I think $6,000 per household is the current number.
Yeah. Now, are they still going to have the same restrictions as the last one?
I don't know. It's still kind of in the works.
Yeah.
I'm nailing all this stuff because they're trying to get something passed that will get past the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no recurring monthly payments in this. Provide nearly $1 trillion for state and local governments, $200 billion for essential worker hazard pay, $75 billion for COVID-19 testing, tracing and isolation efforts, new round of direct payments to Americans of up to $6,000 per household. Let's see, states are facing major tax revenue shortfalls, and deficits could total $650 billion over 3 years,
yep,
according to the estimate of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
Mm.
So, yeah, the new remote voting rules approved on Friday authorized temporary implementation of remote voting by proxy in the event of a public health emergency due to the coronavirus. Yeah, because mm-hmm. I think there was that whole FBI bill that passed last week in the mm-hmm. Senate, which passed by one vote with like Bernie Sanders and some other senators not being there to vote.
Yeah,
which definitely shows like why remote voting is probably pretty important at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there were some people in the House that just didn't have masks on because they're like, well, why should we?
Yeah. Some of them are just assholes. They're absolute sociopaths, and they just do not fucking care.
I would hazard a guess they're white men who think they're impenetrable.
Yeah, it's true.
They're not old. They're not super young. They're not in the age demographic where you can die.
Mm-hmm.
More so likely. And it's like, no, you can still die either way.
Yeah,
they're just finding out in New York there's potential like respiratory illnesses that can pop up even after you are done with coronavirus
mm-hmm.
in infant kids.
Yep.
It's like, so it's just getting out of coronavirus territory doesn't mean you're good.
Mm-hmm.
We still haven't gone through enough of this to find out all of the effects.
Yeah.
That's the scary thing.
And unfortunately, it's also causing other shit, too. Like, this happened in Seoul in South Korea. There was a bunch of outbreaks that are linked to the various gay nightclubs in Seoul. And because of that, it has kickstarted a epidemic of homophobia.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Wonderful. This is the last fucking thing we need.
Yeah, so South Korea is not really very much of a progressive on this topic.
Nope.
It's very much kind of a, don't talk about it. It's not an issue
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And,
like Japan, basically.
Yeah. And so this has kind of raised the alarms to a lot of people that do not like gay people.
Mm-hmm.
And sparking very much like a homophobia pandemic, like what happened with AIDS. But this time for South Korea.
Yep.
Linking this outbreak to gay people, and people getting it are afraid to reveal that they have it because they'll get considered to be gay. They don't. Trying to trace this to people is unfortunately tough because people don't want to obviously be on the list.
Mm-hmm.
To get doxxed and all that kind of stuff, harassed, and yeah, it's not a great situation all around.
Oh, yeah, it's true. So yeah, just more bullshit on top of more bullshit.
Yeah.
Speaking of more bullshit, there was a stay-at-home protest in Florida because they had decided to do some gym closures.
And they want the gyms to open up.
Yeah. And they did this by doing push-ups, apparently.
Yeah.
Proving
seems like
that you don't need the gym membership to stay fit.
Mm.
Well, they want the expensive equipment, I guess. But yeah, it's kind of one of those hilarious things of like, you seem to be showing you don't need the gyms as much as you think because you're all exercising freely on your own. And just one of those kind of funny moments
mm-hmm.
of people doing push-ups and squats to protest. It's like, all right, this is more fun than when they're in the cars blocking hospital access, all that kind of stuff. It was a very Florida protest.
Yeah.
Yep.
You shouldn't let logic, conflict with your beliefs. You know, it's it's a very bad habit to get into.
Yep.
Yeah. So they got some fun tweets here. Somebody in all caps: if you can do squats and push-ups on the sidewalk, you can do them in your living room. You don't need to be at the gym. You absolute ding-dongs.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also in all cap, is like the quote: "We're going to show you why gyms need to be to reopen by doing exercises that don't need a gym to be done." Everyone with the brain. It shows Will Smith in his nerd outfit.
And then, as some of you probably have also known, there's a bunch of prisoners who are being released to home confinement because, let's face it, prisons are like fucking petri dishes for COVID-19. And one of those individuals released was none other than Paul Manafort.
Oh, yeah. One of the techiest people in politics, which is why he's one of Trump's favorite people. But yeah, he's going to serve the remainder of his sentence in home confinement because of concerns over novel coronavirus. Released, let's see, early Wednesday from FCI Loretto in central Pennsylvania. So yeah, he's going to only been in prison for like a year or so.
And it wasn't even like pound me in the ass prison either. It was basically club fed.
He basically had his own apartment. Paid for apartment.
By the taxpayers.
Now he gets to stay home.
Are we going to somehow be paying for him staying home too?
Depending on where he's at. I'm not sure where he's at. Have you Pennsylvania?
And finally, for the COVID-19 dump truck, and honestly, I'm kind of surprised it took this fucking long to happen. JCPenney has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and COVID-19 is what finally did the man.
Yep.
They've their sales have been falling annually since 2016. 860 stores. It's less than a quarter of what it had in 2001. And nearly $11 billion in sales for the last fiscal year, or almost a third of its sales from 2001. But yeah, they got 90,000 people working for them full and part-time as of February. And yeah, they are, see, they have commitments for $900 million in financing from its existing first lien lenders to fund bankruptcy, which includes $450 million of new money, approximately $500 million in cash as of Chapter 11 filing date. And so, yeah, they're going to be working on, they're going to open select stores and continue to offer contact-free curbside pickup service at all open stores. It's e-commerce distribution will continue to fulfill online orders, and customer care centers are answering inquiries as usual. So they're working on this new strategy to refocus stores. Hope to turn it around, I guess.
Chapter 11, that's the recoverable one. It's Chapter 7.
If it was Chapter 7, they would be dead. You know, this one, basically, they're going into like transition, reorganization phase, and
they're rolling constitution.
Reorganizing their debts.
And
it's the precursor to Chapter 7 for them.
For JCPenney,
town that carries pants in my size, so
yeah. But JCPenney, yeah, it's definitely the beginning of the end for them because
it's an old person store.
Yeah, and they basically most of their outlets are like in fucking shopping malls, and you know how well those have been doing for the last few years. So yeah, for JCPenney specifically, it is very much the beginning of the end for them. And for most other companies, this would basically just them going into reorganization and a bunch of stockholders not being able to go, you know, vacation in the Hamptons that summer.
Yeah. You know how old JCPenney is?
Well over a century. I know that.
1913. They had 34 stores initially. Offered Rural America their first depot, providing farmers and others a one-stop shop to buy essential goods at bargain prices. In 1928, it worked its store base up to 1,000 stores. Before the company went public in the Great Depression, by 1994, the retailer had reached $20.4 billion in retail sales, net income of nearing $1 billion.
All right.
And in seven years, they pissed it all away.
Mm-hmm.
because they probably did not react well to the internet.
Nope.
In the 90s, I guess.
No, they did not.
I remember that's where I got my Super Nintendo kit.
Uh-huh.
Never like going there again because it's a store when your parents want to buy you clothes.
Mm-hmm. So that's the end for COVID-19 dump truck this week. Tune in tomorrow, next week, when we'll have a fresh load for your face. Next up, we got the last, more or less serious, story for the night. Senator Richard Burr is going to be stepping down from the Intelligence Committee. And you know why. It's because he got caught insider trading, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Him and that other lady, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head, but
Loeffler's the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Loeffler, which
and is still pretending somebody, like she did nothing wrong.
Yeah, and I saw like a court artist drawings of those two sitting together during the impeachment hearings.
Mm-hmm.
And he specifically noted that he was not wearing socks when he was lounging in there. I was like, that's good detail. It's just like an arrow wrote down no socks, arrow to his ankles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what if he was wearing no-show socks? I mean, how old is he? Is he about 60, 50, 60?
Yeah, sure.
Those old men, they like those no-show socks. I don't know why.
Yeah, or he'd just be that much of a slob. He's like, I don't need socks.
Mm.
Just kind of sweating them.
Yeah.
I don't.
Gonna just turn my ankles black.
Which one of y'all watching Speed Racer? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah.
He's
stepping down, and that's shaking conservatives to their core because a member of the GOP admitted fault.
That's not in the playbook.
No.
Yeah. What the fuck? You're making it act like we actually have a conscience, man.
But yeah, the FBI had a warrant out for him. Got his computer and all that. Got all the information. Which of course, people have to point out, you know, to get a warrant, you have to talk to a judge and get provide reasonable evidence that they did something wrong. Because people don't understand what a warrant is.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently.
You think watching all those police procedurals, you'd learn what they are.
Yeah, like, we've had, like, what, like, 80 renditions of Law and Order. Don't you think they get the hint at some goddamn point?
Thousands of episodes.
Well, that makes the assumption that people actually watch Law and Order.
Oh, they do.
They do. People watch the shit out of Law and Order.
Oh, wow.
They totally do.
But,
it's like the last thing I would want to watch in this sort of, in coronavirus town. It's like, I don't want anything depressing like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what shit's like CSI Miami is for. Then you can just make fun of Caruso.
Yeah.
But so that's the end of the series part of the show. We now got the entertainment portion. First and foremost, Audible has announced that they're doing an audio adaptation of the famous comic The Sandman, and they've got a great cast lined up for it, and it's going to be debuting on July 15th.
Ooh, yeah, who are some of the people?
James McAvoy is going to be playing Dream.
Yeah.
Riz Ahmed as Corinthian.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Vivian Bond as Desire.
Mm-hmm.
Arthur Darvill as William Shakespeare.
Yep.
Kat Dennings is Death.
Mm-hmm.
Taron Egerton is John Constantine.
Yep.
William Hope is Dr. Destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Josie Lawrence is Mad Hetty.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Miriam Margolis is Despair.
Yep.
Let's see. Samantha Morton is Urania Blackwell. Let's see. Bebe Neuwirth is the Siamese Cat. Andy Serkis is Matthew the Raven.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Sheen is Lucifer. There's maybe a couple other people that aren't mentioned there, but pretty good cast for that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny because, you know, it's for kids who did, you know, for we've gone through like a generation or two now of comic fans who didn't grow up while that comic was being published. And so some of them don't quite get the hype because of how influential it was, that it's basically the Seinfeld is unfunny, you know, syndrome. You know, it did so many things new that a bunch of other shit copied it. And so what was groundbreaking then is kind of cliche now.
See, thanks to my mom, Death, the High Cost of Living was actually my comic's gateway drug.
Yep.
So I think I've still got her original copies of it somewhere around here.
Mm-hmm. It's a comic went through an interesting history, too. People forget it actually kind of started out as a superhero comic. Hmm. Like, really, it did.
Well, back then, if you were going to make a comic, that was how you had to pitch it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to remember this is
no matter
the early
where
90s.
You were actually going to take it.
Yeah, you got to remember this was early 90s we were talking about. Hmm. And, you know, this was the beginning of the Image era, and Vertigo was just starting out, so... Yeah. Next up, Marvel. Marvel has announced that a comic publication will resume on this month on the 27th, but it's kind of a small, limited number they're putting out. They're putting out, Amazing Spider-Man number 43, Avengers number 33, Marauders number 10.
Yes.
Star Wars, Dr. Aphra number 1, and Venom number 25.
Any release list that includes Marauders is a good one. So I am totally here for it.
Yeah.
But they are going to be gradually increasing the volume of comics releases week after week, and they've actually got their schedule out through the beginning of July. So, yeah, things are starting to get moving again on that front. And that's fantastic news because Dawn of X has been so good.
Yep. Awesome. Next up, Netflix is ordering a new project called Sweet Tooth from Robert Downey Jr.'s production company.
And it's an adaptation of a DC Vertigo comic.
Yep. I know of it. I'm trying to remember the guy behind it, but it's one of the dudes behind, I know because I've read it. It's the one of the guys behind one of my favorite sci-fi comics
Jeff
of all time.
Lemire?
Jeff Lemire. Guy behind, he's done Descenders. He's done a bunch of awesome shit.
They're doing a one-hour drama for this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, done by Team Downey. Stars Christian Convery. Mm-hmm. Nanzo Anozie. Adil Akhtar and Will Forte. Sweet Tooth is a coming of age tale of Gus, a part boy, part deer who leaves home amid a cataclysmic world event. Joins a ragtag family of humans and animal children hybrids like himself in search of answers about this new world and the mystery behind his hybrid origins.
Mm-hmm.
James Brolin has also been cast as the voice of the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. They got Jim Mickle of Hap and Leonard in The Shadow of the Moon and Cold in July, and Beth Schwartz of Arrow and DC's Legends of Tomorrow as co-showrunners, writers, and executive producers. It's going to be an 8-episode series.
Mm-hmm.
Mickle also directs. And yeah.
Awesome.
Seems like it should be pretty good. Yeah, it used to be a Hulu production.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously got moved after Disney acquired it.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to keep the DC show on board.
Yeah.
Because so Robert Downey Jr. essentially working with Warner Brothers on a DC show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a bit weird, but...
Well, I mean, Marvel doesn't have anything for him to do, so...
Yeah.
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 So I forgot to mention this about the Sandman thing. Neil Gaiman's going to be doing narrator.
Of course.
Good.
He has to. That's like...
We would have to riot otherwise.
Yeah.
But, so I guess Netflix is doing an Eric Andre special on
June
23rd.
Oh, that's going to be fucking insane.
Called Legalize Everything.
Mm-hmm.
No, there are some things that really should not be legalized. But that's okay.
Well, we'll see what his position is.
All right. That's what. Next up, we got a new Star Trek show coming. Star Trek show announced for CBS All Access. It's going to be called Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh, starring Anson Pike Mount one, as Pike, Rebecca Romijn as number one, and Ethan Peck as Spock. It'll follow Pike, Spock, and number one in the decade before Captain Kirk boarded the USS Enterprise to explore new worlds around the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
They're introduced in season two of Star Trek Discovery. And yeah, they're also featured in the first episode of season two of Star Trek Short Treks.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, not sure when this is going to be happening, but they just announced this.
Yeah.
Like in the past couple hours.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we got a new release date for The New Mutants. August 28th.
So what do you think the chances they just cancel this and put it on Disney Plus?
About 75 to 80.
Yeah, probably.
I think it was supposed to hit like 2 years ago. And they're saying, all right, it's going to be out in 3 months, 3.5 months.
They might even want to just scrap it and do a completely different movie based on the New Mutants property, because its stock is going up in the Marvel portfolio, and I don't really think this is the project that they want to put out there into the movie business.
Just holdover from Fox.
Yeah, I know.
The X-Men still are not. Mutants are still not part of the MCU yet. And with the delays, it's going to be even a while longer still.
Yeah.
For whenever they decide to drop them in at the end credits.
Honestly, I still say there's one scene in House of X number 4, I want to say, that mm-hmm. would be a perfect post-credits scene to introduce the X-Men to the MCU, mm-hmm. or mutants in general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just have that completely unrelated to moment to anything that happened in whatever movie they decide to drop it in, and have that telepathic message from Charles Xavier, humans mm-hmm. of the world, while you were sleeping, the world changed.
Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, that would be amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, we now know that Disney is actually going to be doing a proper Percy Jackson series for Disney Plus.
Okay.
Hey. Good for all the people that were.
It could be good.
Annoyed by the movie.
Yeah, the movie was. Ugh.
So yeah, that's where we're at.
Yep.
Compared to a book series that I've been told is actually not half bad,
it's fucking good, is what it is.
Mm.
Rick Riordan, he can write. Mm. He can write.
Yep. Let's see. Rick Riordan, author of the Percy Jack series, made the announcement Thursday. Let's see. Followed up with, we can't say much more at this stage. We are very excited about the idea of a live-action series of the highest quality following the storyline of the original Percy Jackson five-book series, starting with The Lightning Thief in Season 1. Rest assured, Becky and I will be involved in person in every aspect of the show. Mm. So, yeah.
All right. And here's some news I've definitely been waiting for. Hamilton. Yes, the original Broadway show with the original cast.
Mm-hmm.
They filmed it, and it's coming to Disney Plus on July 3rd.
And they're saying, screw the theater release.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah, because chances are theaters are probably still going to be,
Yeah, this still wasn't going to be coming out until
next year.
October next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's just ready now, let's get it out.
Yeah.
Saying,
what I think happened was a bunch
of
people.
So when are we going to get the AMC stall storm?
Yeah.
They can't piss off Disney.
Who gives a shit? Yeah.
No, I want to see it. I've been enjoying the salt storm.
Yeah.
We don't want your $1 billion. That wouldn't save us. Robert Iger and Lin-Manuel Miranda were on Good Morning America to announce it'll brighten up the July 4th weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And people are now worried about censoring, which I assume is not part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, Lin-Manuel Miranda would not have brought it to them.
He wouldn't have touched it.
Yeah. No, he would not have.
They're paying $75 million for this. They're not going to cut it up and piss off people.
Mm-hmm. What I think happened was a bunch of people wrote in basically about that delay till 2021. They're like, no, we want this sooner.
Mm-hmm. So we can make more money now. Yeah. This is already ready to go. We don't have to do any filming or anything for this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unlike everything else we're about to make.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to finish up.
Yeah.
They got interrupted by this rude virus.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably what it is. Like, this is in the can. This is ready to go.
Yep.
Let's just get it out there.
Yep.
Instead of waiting a year and a half for this.
Give it
to them.
Yep.
Stop letting people do the torrent thing.
Yeah.
Let's give them the official one so they get a high quality version of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't a camera.
Dude with the camera shaking all over the place.
Yeah.
You're wondering if them looking up there is like, oh, this is a camera.
Mm.
That's always like about that sort of stuff. It's like, oh, is he looking at the camera? Are they going to call this guy out? No? Okay.
Oh, they do get called out. It's just he does. Lin-Manuel Miranda did it on social media, basically.
Yeah. Well, I like the notion of he went through all this trouble, paid for these tickets, and then uses the cheap conversion software. It's like, well, you didn't torrent this too?
Yeah. And finally, last story for the night, Adventure Time is coming back, and it's going to HBO Max.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing a special called Adventure Time Distant Lands BMO.
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 BMO. Yep, BMO.
Yeah. Premiered Thursday, June 25th. Apparently, this service launches May 27th. I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
It's out in less than 2 weeks.
Yep.
But they got a bunch of other dates as well for stuff. But yeah, it seems like they... let's see. Oh, yeah. They got the synopsis. Return to the Land of Ooo and Beyond in Adventure Time Distant Lands.
Mm-hmm.
4 breakout specials. Okay. Explore the unseen corners of the world. Characters both familiar and brand new. The first one is BMO. It follows a lovable little robot in a new adventure. There's a deadly space emergency in the farthest reaches of the galaxy. There's only one hero to call. Mm-hmm. It's probably not BMO, except that this time it is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's June 25th. Let's see. They also got the second season of Doom Patrol.
Yep.
About that same day, and a new season of Sesame Workshop's animated series, Esme and Roy.
Yeah, we got a poster down here.
Yeah,
BMO with his little cowboy hat.
He's basically just a Game Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he is. That's basically what BMO is supposed to be. He is a Game Boy.
All right. Let's see. They also have new season of Search Party, season 3, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. New premiere dates for HBO Max originals. Let's see Amy Schumer's documentary Expecting Amy is July 9th.
Mm-hmm.
Adult animated comedy Close Enough is July 9th. Docuseries The House of Ho is July 16th. Anime children's series Tig and Seek is July 23rd. Comedy Frayed is July 30th. Animal rescue series The Doghouse is July 30th. And the Seth Rogen feature film American Pickle, August 6th, which is the first HBO Max original film on the platform under the Warner Max label.
Yeah.
So they're going to have some stuff coming out over the summer.
Mm. Yep.
It's weird because if you want like HBO stuff, it's very confusing now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Max, Go, and Now,
yeah.
I think, are their services.
Now Go Max.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
Or Go Max Now. Maybe that's how they're going to market it.
Yeah. But
it's like, hey, it's $50 and you get all this shit.
Yeah.
That's kind of what
Or if you really don't like the dog.
Yeah.
Go now, Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm legitimately interested in seeing, like, because the thing with Adventure Time is it had to kind of straddle a very fine line because it was still technically a Cartoon Network property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, because, like, let's be honest. There's a reason why they had to keep, Princess Bubblegum and Marceline's relationship, like, down low until, like, the last 15 seconds of the final episode, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Still. So, you know, here, there, they don't quite have to hold back this time, which makes me wonder what exactly Pendleton Ward is going to end up dreaming up this time.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Things just might be a little bit more overt. Who knows?
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely not a Rick and Morty situation.
No.
No.
He's an Adult Swim, just do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah.
Yep. It's true. But anyway. All right. I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks. So with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you've got a question, comment, something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And if we're not on there, you know, just wait a little while. I mean, what the fuck else are you going to do? Go outside? There's insane people waving around flags saying that quarantine is evil. With that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie, good night. Good God, I cannot wait until goddamn November.